Hey, it's Amelia, aka Big Tit.
And I'm Natasha, aka Little Tit.
And together, we're the Graveyard Girls.
Hello.
Welcome back.
Welcome back.
Yeah, to another episode with the Graveyard Girls. And it's one of my cases this week.
It is.
Are we jumping just straight into the case?
Do we have anything to begin? We have new merch.
Yeah, new stuff in the shop.
Yeah, so
go and have a little nosy at that. By the time this comes out, are we going to be in like what, July, August?
We have no idea. We are recording like this in like
a month ahead. Yeah,
6 weeks ahead, 4 weeks ahead.
Okay, maybe August. We need your
stories.
Yeah, this is like your last chance to sort of send them in because we want them for the spooky season.
Mm-hmm.
But we also need time to put them together.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, if you've had any strange experiences.
Paranormal,
yeah,
or just scary,
yeah. Maybe you saw a ghost.
Mm?
Maybe grandma came back.
What made you believe in the paranormal?
Yeah, or even maybe connections that you've had with like well-known criminals. Maybe you met one.
Ooh.
Maybe you're related to one.
Maybe you are one.
Ooh. Oh, yeah. No. If there's any killers out there. Hey. That happen to be listening to this.
Well, we kind of do have a connection with the Times Square killer, if you think about it. So if that man who was listening, if he wants to pass on some things, maybe we could have some things. Yeah,
can you give us an insider? But yeah, maybe like, you know, like, was it the Zodiac that kept sending hints into the thingies?
Don't do it in things.
Yeah, don't make it too cryptic.
Yeah.
But you know like how you haven't told the police anything and there's an unsolved murder out there? Mm. Maybe like send us clues.
Ooh.
And we'll like try and solve
the
case.
Are we going to be like the Bletchley Circle?
Sort of, yeah. Ooh,
not too complicated because my brain doesn't work.
Yeah, don't send too much. And like, don't come after us if we get it wrong.
All right.
All right. So yeah, send us your murder stories of who you've killed.
Mm. Or if you have seen aliens.
I don't really want the alien ones.
I know you don't.
I have to allow the alien ones.
You have to allow everything. Everyone has their own story to tell. Okay. If it happened to you,
if you're sending me alien ones, I really want some really good concrete proof.
We're not asking for proof, we're asking for stories.
No, I know, but I don't believe in aliens.
It's not fair that you ask for proof of the aliens and not fair proof of the ghosts. That's not fair.
Okay, well, if they have proof that...
If you have proof you're willing to share, that's fine.
Yeah.
But it's not necessary.
Okay.
Just it has to have happened.
Yeah.
We don't want any creepy pastas or anything like that. We want true stories.
True stories. Things have actually happened. We don't want anything made up. And if you want to remain anonymous, mm-hmm. you can. But if you're quite happy for us to mention who you are, then we'll also do that. If you can send it to our email, which is thegraveyardgirlspod@gmail.com.
Yeah.
And... you can, if you really don't want to send it by email, because I know I've spotted a few times when we've mentioned this on TikTok. If you want to send us a direct message, you can. The only reason we didn't suggest it at the beginning is because it's quite easy for those messages to get lost.
Yeah.
Because there's so many different inboxes that it gets sent to that it can get a little bit lost. So if you want to guarantee that we're going to get it, send it to the email.
Mm-hmm.
We do obviously check our messages on other social media, but it's quite easy for it to get lost or put in hidden requests.
Yeah.
So we won't necessarily see it. If you're really struggling with writing it down, I guess you could send us an audio clip if that's an easier way for you to do it. Feel free to send us a little audio clip of your story and we'll give that a listen. We just send in anything that you've got that you think might fill the criteria and we'll give it a share in our little like spooky stories mini series.
Yeah, I can't wait.
I know, I'm quite excited now. We've had a few already, but we want more.
Mm-hmm.
So,
need to like bank them. Otherwise, we're going to lose some and be like, I sent mine in. And we're like, yeah, I can't find it. Like, I couldn't find the thing earlier.
Yeah, I know. It's
had a right nightmare.
Okay. But yeah, so get them in soon. Like, really, really soon. Because we want to put the episodes together. Because if we can, we like to record a little bit ahead.
Mm-hmm.
So, we've got a few to get started, but we'd like a few more. So, we obviously need the time to read through them and then put the episode together. Oh, my tummy just crumbled.
I didn't hear it.
I've got a tummy ghost.
I think mine just rumbled as well. They're communicating.
There we go. They're speaking with the underworld.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
So what do you have for me today?
I have another Victorian case for us.
Okay.
But I'm going for a double murder.
A double murder today. Okay.
You know, because like sometimes a single murder. Sorry, we're distracted by the dog. She's very cute.
She's asleep. Oh, that's the cutest thing.
I'm bored already with my Victorian murder. She's like, no, no, no.
It's not boring. Sorry, continue. I just saw the ear.
But yeah, so I thought sometimes, you know, we've had a lot of like a single person being bludgeoned to death. Mm-hmm. So, you know, like, why not have a double murder?
Double murder.
I'm spicing it up a little bit. Okay. So I originally came across this case when reading the book Rivals of the Ripper by Jan, it's like Bondson. I think that's how you do it. But it's got an extra E in it. But I don't think it's like Bondason.
Bondson.
Okay. I apologise to her if I've like said it wrong.
Is it her? Jan?
I'm presuming that was short for Janet.
I don't know.
Maybe I've made presumptions there. Maybe it's not.
You should never presume, Amelia.
Okay. I apologise. Well, okay. Well, if I fucked all of this off, I'm very sorry. But I have enjoyed your books because it's been a source of a lot of my cases. Okay. So obviously, and those of you that have been following us for a little while will know that I'm a bit of a fan of all the different books and these Victorian cases.
Yes, you are.
I've covered quite a few of them now. I just like them because I like finding them in the book, but then I like going away and then sort of like deep diving into them and finding newspaper articles and everything else. So like I said, I take it from the book first, then I end up Googling stuff because as I go along and read these cases, I kind of have questions in my head that pop up. And then sometimes you get to the end and you're like, she didn't answer my question. And maybe it's because they didn't know, or like maybe someone somewhere else has managed to find the information. So I like to go and have a little nosy after that. And then I also like looking at the old newspaper articles because I like the way they write some things sometimes.
Oh, yes. Like, okay. Yeah, sorry. I was going to quote one of your... No, I can't remember. It was one of your other... I think it was Patreon. Where you read out all the weird newspaper.
Yes. The woman with 20 teaspoons.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's just strange.
Yeah, I like those things. I maybe should. I need to do another one of those, maybe.
Yeah.
Okay. So before I get into all of the grisly details of this double murder, I want to cover a little bit of background information. Okay. So in the year 1794, a lady by the name of Sarah Deem would be born. She'd go on to marry a man by the name of William Pritchard, and together they'd have three children, Edwin, Jemima, and Sarah.
Jemima? Not heard that name for ages.
It's not, but quite popular for the time.
Sorry, I had a bug, and I was just...
I thought it was a leaf.
Oh, was it a leaf? I don't know. Make sure it's not in here.
Okay. Unfortunately, William passed away. Natural causes from what I can guess, nothing suspicious. And so Sarah goes on to marry another man by the name of John Squires. He works as a print seller and sets up shop in... Oh, God, this is a lot of S's in one word, in one sentence. He sets up shop in Shoreditch.
She sells seashells on the seashore, yes.
Okay. So according to the... So now we're going fast forward quite a few years. According to the 1841 census, the family are now living and working in number 118... Worship Street in Shoreditch, and registered to that address are Sarah Squires, John Squires, Edwin Pritchard, Jemima Pritchard, Francis Squires, and Christina Squires. Now, Sarah's youngest daughter, Sarah, isn't in this record, and I can't work out, and she's from the previous marriage, so I can't work out if she either passed away in infancy, which would be quite common for the time, but then later on, when I was searching for other things, another Sarah Squires cropped up, but in America from England, and would be around the same age. So I don't know if there's something wrong with the record, or if she's just not around at the time. So when I've done the case, they've not included her. I don't really know whether she's alive, she's dead, or whether the records are just wrong.
Yeah,
it's very confusing for these times. Sometimes when you look through these records, things are so easily misrecorded.
Yeah,
that it gets very complicated.
These names sound very familiar.
Okay, well you might know about it then.
Okay,
maybe. Okay. So, as well as the Squire's family, there was also four lodgers, as well as two small children, William IV and another girl called Jemima, who was 2 years old. So, not Sarah's Jemima, another Jemima. Now, it's noted that these two young children were not the children of any of the lodgers or of the Squires. So, I was a little bit confused by it.
Mm.
but I don't believe them to be any relatives of the Squires, or at least I don't have any proof they are, so I wondered if they were either adopted or would be maybe being temporarily taken care of, or were they illegitimate children, and so that's why no one was claiming them to be theirs.
Yeah.
Okay. So, at this point in time, I don't know whether they are important to the case or not, or whether... Well, at least I don't have any proof that they're important to the case. But it's worth noting that on the census for the houses, these two very young children were included, but they didn't seem to belong to anyone. So I just thought it was a bit
strange.
Odd.
Okay.
So by 1851, the family have moved to another shop, but on the same street, and they still have six other lodgers with them, as well as their family, so it's very crowded. Okay. Then in 1853, John Squires passes away. He's obviously quite a bit older by this point. So again, natural causes, nothing suspicious. And after his death, Sarah cannot manage the upkeep of the shop all by herself. So she is forced to move to a smaller shop in Old Hoxton in London. She continues to work as a print seller, and both Jemima and Christina are helping by working in the shop. So it's just her and her two daughters at this point. It's also worth noting, the sons are still alive, but they're off doing their own thing. So at this point in time, it's also worth noting that Christina has now had a child called George, though it is out of wedlock.
Okay.
So I wonder if that's also why she stayed with her mum, so more support than anything else. So then we're going to fast forward nearly 20 years, and Sarah is now in her late 70s. Christina is still working with her mother in the shop at number 46 Hyde Road in Old Hoxton. Jemima, however, has moved, though I believe, and she's married and moved away with her husband. However, I do believe the husband has done a runner to Scotland.
Okay.
And left her behind. So she has remained in the marital home, and I think she has one child.
Okay.
Which is in Old Ford. So not too far from Old Hoxton, but is a little way away. The son Francis, so the one from Sarah's marriage to John, the second husband, appears to be a bit of a black sheep. He's also known as Frank. But he's referred to as a drunk and has spent many years in and out of workhouses, as well as a psychiatric hospital and prisons. So he's getting himself into a little spot of bother. Okay. And the eldest son, Edwin, so from the very first marriage, he's married, has a wife and some children, and is working away as a musician. So he's not in the area. So from what I can kind of work out, all the children are very different from each other. So Sarah, to me, strikes me obviously as a very hard-working lady, still up every day, well into her 70s. Because obviously you think she was born in 1794, we're now in the 1850s. So she's...
Yeah, because when you said 17, I was just like, is that Victorian?
So the murder will take place in Victorian times. But Sarah's really, I don't know, she's doing well to still be working in this time. I mean, I think they're of that sort of generational thing where you basically work till you drop, so you know, she's still going for
there's no retirement.
So I don't believe them to be rich, but I do think that Sarah had saved some money. Now, there was some talk later on that she had sums of money tucked away in her house, but there's no concrete proof of that. So some people said she did and others didn't. Okay, so they weren't a flash in your face sort of like, I'm loaded, I do really well for myself type of family. But both Sarah and her daughter Christina, who was obviously still living with her, were described as quiet, timid and reserved women. So they didn't really interact with people outside of the print selling, and so they just pretty much kept themselves to themselves. So quite reserved people, I get the impression. So I then had a look at what the area was like at the time. Now, this area of London is quite crowded, and you have a big mix of people in there. So from what I can make out, I think there was a fair bit of crime going on in the area. So the Squires themselves had been victims of burglary on a number of occasions, which had left poor old Sarah quite fearful. So I feel like she's quite a worried and anxious little old lady. Okay. So one of these more serious burglaries took place on Sunday the 7th of July in 1872. Sarah heard a noise to the rear of the shop. She obviously went to go and take a look. And when she did, to her shock, she saw several burglars trying to break into the property from the garden at the rear of the property. She quickly ran to the first floor window and shouted for assistance. Okay. Policemen on patrol heard her cries and quickly came running. Though by the time they'd reached the shop, the burglars had made a run for it. The windows had been smashed and there was numerous holes in the door where the thieves had tried to force their way in. Sarah was quite understandably upset, and made a comment to the effect of, one of these days, these burglars are going to kill me. And that's exactly what's about to happen.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Okay.
She's a soothsayer.
She is. Oh, so no. they should have listened to her. Mm-hmm.
You should always listen to women.
This is it. But I feel like this time there's been lots of little burglaries and it's left her quite scared.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if there's sort of like gangs and stuff, like just breaking into things. I also think maybe bored kids as well. A combination of the two.
Yeah, probably.
Okay. So just 3 days later, on the 10th of July in 1872, a boy was about to stumble across something grisly.
Oh, no.
Sometime in the early afternoon, a boy by the name of William Ayres went to the squire's shop to buy some stationery. To his surprise, neither of the ladies were at the counter, and so he shouted for Mrs. Squires, but nobody came. He peered round only to see a pool of blood on the floor at the end of the counter. William quickly ran across the street to Dodd's greengrocer's at number 73 and raised the alarm. Mrs. Harriet Dodd quickly went back to the squire's shop, accompanied by the boy. She quickly noticed blood on the top of the counter, and so she opened up the flaps. It's one of those you lift up and then you walk through. Okay. She lifted the flap of the counter, and to her shock, she discovered the body of Mrs. Squires lying just inside the counter with her feet pointing towards the shop window.
Oh, no.
Okay. One arm was extended by her side and the other bent, holding her chest. By her right temple was a rather significant injury, and where her skull had been smashed and had pierced her brain.
Oh.
Yeah. Okay. So, quite graphic, the scene I'm imagining. Obviously, Mrs. Dodd was rather alarmed, and she ran out into the street and screamed murder a number of times. I think that's how it was in the day, you just ran out and she was like, murder, murder!
Yeah, it's like, fire, fire.
Yeah.
You don't have any, like, way to announce or get in contact with police other than yelling.
Yeah. So, obviously, people quite quickly came running, including her own husband, Edward Dodd, who was also obviously in the shop opposite.
Mm-hmm.
Two police officers quickly arrived and undertook the search of the premises. And it would be during that search that they would stumble across the mangled body of poor Christina Squires.
Oh.
Okay. She was found in the passage leading from the back parlour to the kitchen, and like her mother, she too had sustained serious head injuries.
Okay.
Drawers and boxes had been broken and ransacked, so it was quite obvious that a robbery had taken place.
Okay. Or had it.
Or had it.
Do, do, do. I don't know.
Might be something to consider for later. Okay. Huge crowds soon congregated, and the police constables had to stand guard on the shop to stop people from entering, as a number had desperately tried to catch a glimpse of the two deceased.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so like us now, you know, like we like our true crime.
Mm.
Back in those days, people were like trying to trample all over the place to try and
catch a glimpse. Some people are still trying to do that.
Yeah,
that's so the ones we don't like.
The stories.
Yes.
Mm. Okay. Initial thoughts were that the murder weapon was either a hammer or an iron bar.
Mm.
Okay. A knocked over clock in one room had its dial stuck at 12, and so that led the police to believe that that was the time of death.
Mm.
Okay. Or at least around that time.
Or a distraction.
Maybe.
No one's thinking that far ahead.
Okay. According to the Times newspaper from the 11th of July, it was stated that the shop had opened at normal in the morning, and that Christina had been seen in and around the shop for various times between 9 and 11 o'clock.
Mm.
One person stated that they were positive they'd seen Mrs. Squire standing in her door as late as 12:30, though that would significantly contradict the clock time.
It was her ghost.
Maybe.
Huh?
Okay. We obviously know the boy went in sometime after 1 p.m.
Mm.
Okay. So then a Dr. John Hugh Hawthorne, who had arrived at the crime scene around 2 p.m, agreed with police that the pair looked like they'd been deceased for a couple of hours. So that would date back to around the 12 o'clock. Okay. The doctor added that he'd never seen two bodies so brutally battered about.
Ooh.
So I imagine it's rather graphic. It's not just a casual bump to the head. I think there's bits everywhere.
Oh yeah, if you can see brain. It's not a normal...
Yeah, not very nice. Yeah. Bit grisly. Okay. So then there was more to be learnt about the extent of the injuries that the pair had suffered, but at first glance this is what was noted. Sarah had multiple wounds on her head, and a large part of her left ear had been cut off. So she'd been battered that badly that it's ripped body parts off.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Christina's face had been so badly disfigured that she was barely recognisable.
Oh.
So they're really... Yeah. So that was quite vicious an attack. Inspector Samuel Ramsay was placed in charge of the investigation, and he was quick to start interviewing and questioning those who had gathered outside the shop. It would appear that the pair were generally well-liked and had no known enemies. It was rumoured that they'd kept large sums of money in the house, though, as I said earlier, this was never verified, but could be a possible motive. Because if other people in the area believe it, maybe they think there's something to get there.
Yeah.
Okay. Obviously, the inspector had been informed of the attempted burglary just 3 days earlier, so it wouldn't be too far-fetched to assume that it was those that had come back and returned and obviously tried to do it again, but maybe took it a little bit too far.
Yeah. If they think there's money in the house, they can't find it, they might
start ransacking it. Maybe the ladies put up a fight.
Yeah.
Yeah. Goes a bit too far.
Yeah.
Okay. Burglary gone wrong. Very wrong in this case.
Just a bit.
Okay. So many were quick to throw around... Many were quick to throw accusations that Sarah's trouble son, Frank, wasn't somehow involved. So it felt a bit like, all right, fucking hell, just because he's got trouble. I don't believe it's Frank either. Okay. So the reason this thing came about is because she'd recently refused to financially help him anymore.
Mm.
And many had claimed that this had left him mad and quite angry.
Yeah, but not like that.
Yeah, no. She can't keep up with him anymore. She's in her late 70s. He's obviously been in and out of institutions his whole life. She's probably like, I can't support you anymore. Yeah. So, you know, you're on your own.
Yeah.
So then more rumours flew about. Flew about? Yeah, that's right. More rumours flew about.
Yeah.
That some people had seen Frank in the neighbourhood shortly before the murders had happened. So it wasn't looking particularly good. So he obviously made him suspect number one at the time. This was all proven to be nothing but rumours, however, when it was confirmed that after Sarah had refused him further financial aid, he'd been placed in a lunatic wing of the Shoreditch workhouse. So it doesn't necessarily mean that he was completely mad, but that's everyone was kind of thrown into
it's how
it was at the time. Yeah. I mean, he obviously had troubles, but I think it was more he was a drunk more than anything else.
I know. Sometimes I think...
Because it's obviously it's a disease, isn't it, alcoholism? But yeah. I don't know how much... Was it a case of just he couldn't get work anywhere else because he was a drunk?
Mm.
So they kind of just dump all of these people in a place.
Mm. It's like, in a way, like the old poor houses, if we kind of had something like that now.
Yeah, in a weird way, we need it, but better conditions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I mean. So people who are homeless, they have somewhere to live and they don't have to...
And work. They can get themselves back on their feet and then they've gained experience in an area. Yeah.
The initial idea of it sounds good.
Yeah, I think it was a good idea. It was obviously aids to help because they obviously had a massive problem at that point in time, which is why they were created in the first place. It's just they obviously weren't maintained very well and people were treated very poorly.
Exactly. I don't agree with that part, but the rest of it, yeah.
Mm. Okay. So those at the workhouse confirmed that Frank had not left the workhouse at all on that day, and this was further backed up by others that were living and working there on the day, as Frank had worked as a kitchen helper at the time of the murders. And so when the murder was supposed to have taken place, Frank was in fact busy serving soup to the workhouse inmates.
Mm, so he has a solid alibi.
Yeah. So obviously the police were still weren't 100% convinced, so they checked his clothes. However, nothing showed any signs of blood on any of his things. So with how brutally they've been murdered, you would have expected at least some blood.
Yeah, and like he's not going to do that to his own mum and sister.
Yeah, I think it's just for the time, isn't it? They're quick to look for suspects, and I suppose you do go most obvious, don't you, that family members?
Yeah.
Okay, so Edwin, the other son, is obviously the next suspect because he'd stand to inherit. But Edwin... So obviously he fell in as the next suspect, but he too had an alibi as he was away working in Brentwood and obviously him being a musician. So he was all backed up. So he was in the clear as well.
Yeah.
So the police's hopes of quickly making an arrest and closing the case were starting to diminish. So the Metropolitan Police were contacted for extra help. And as a result, both Chief Inspector William Palmer and Detective Sergeant Lansdowne were sent to assist. They were quick to interview people in and about on the day and were quickly able to find some new clues and leads, so looking promising. A man by the name of Richard Randall, who had been driving a two-horse cart in Hyde Road around 1:15 p.m, had seen a tall man dash from out of the shop with such speed that he had in fact knocked over the boy who was leading the horses and nearly fell over.
Mm.
Okay. He was described as being very pale with a dark beard and wearing a wide hat. He had a cut across his left knee on his trousers.
Mm.
Randall said that he jumped down from the cart and shouted, "Who the devil was he knocking over?" So he's obviously sort of not accosted the man, but been like, "What the hell are you doing?"
Mm.
Like, "You've ran into my boy that's pulling my horses along."
Kind of getting like Spring-Heeled Jack.
Yeah.
A little bit.
So apparently the mystery man didn't reply and simply ran off towards Francis Street, disappearing into a crowd. Okay. So who is the mystery man?
The murderer.
Possibly. he's a strong suspect, isn't he? But he's never identified. So but to be fair,
he might not necessarily have murdered. He might have seen them.
And gone, "Oh shit, I don't want to be involved in this." And pegged it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So possible. But mystery man, so he's never identified.
Mm.
Okay.
So
next to come up was the full post-mortem, which was conducted by Dr. Forbes. Upon closer examination, he reported that Sarah had sustained 5 blows to her skull with an instrument resembling a hammer. So their initial reports of it being a hammer or an iron bar was very good.
Mm.
So the skull was so badly fractured that it had exposed the brain.
Mm.
Not very nice.
Not okay. Very nice at all.
And I'm not going to lie, this next bit doesn't get any nicer. Christina had suffered no fewer than 15 blows to her head. Her skull, too, had been completely shattered. Interestingly, Christina's hand was found to be clutching some strands of grey hair.
Oh.
Yes. That hair was quickly preserved, luckily, and placed into evidence.
Oh.
Also at the crime scene, they'd been able to retrieve a button in one of the pools of blood, so that too was handed in as evidence. Mm-hmm. So quite good at evidence collecting here.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So the police thought they'd obviously caught a breakthrough when they'd heard that a man with a grey beard had just been detained in Kentish Town Police Station, and that he was found to have a large amount of blood on his vest, as well as a bag that could not be accounted for.
Mm-hmm.
He had a Hoxton address in his pocketbook, which is obviously where the shop was, but he was later able, unfortunately, to provide a solid alibi. So initially it was like, "Oh, we found a man with blood on, he's got a grey beard," which would obviously match the
Does he have a clump?
Grey hair. And he was a bit dishevelled.
It's a strange place to pull it from if it is from the beard.
Yeah, that's what I thought. So when they mentioned that, I was like, "Well, I don't think he is a suspect."
Yeah.
But obviously then I later found out he had a solid alibi. But I think on initial reports, I think they were a bit like, "Ooh, this could be the man. He's also got a bag that he's unaccounted for, so that would fit into the robbery theory quite also, nice."
Beard hair and hair.
Very different. Yeah. So, but I think at the time, I don't think they necessarily think they just saw hair and thought,
pure straight, and then this one's all like wiry. They're like, "I don't know. I think it's a match." And you're like, "No."
But I think it's hard, isn't it? Because, obviously, you know when you get descriptions, someone might have a description of something, but like it's not that accurate, so it just gets circulated around. You know, like a telegram would have come down. They're like, "Oh, we've got a man of so-and-so."
Yeah.
So they might have thought, "Well, most of it matches, so we'll at least go and have a look and check this guy out." But yeah, as it turns out, he has an alibi. So it wasn't this guy.
So not him.
Not
but
him.
Again, I can imagine she pulled it from his head rather than his beard. So even
I think she did. But then are they thinking a man with a grey beard, could he also have grey hair?
Yes. Turns out he's bald.
Yeah. Okay. So by the 12th of July, some 2,000 posters and small bills had been distributed all over London and in surrounding counties, offering a £100 reward for information about the murders.
Mm.
They also offered a free pardon to any accomplice who informed upon the main perpetrator. So I'm guessing at this point they believed it to be a gang-related thing, which, to be fair, looking at the amount of mess that was made and the fact they've bludgeoned 2 women, granted one is old, but still to tackle 2 women, it does kind of sound like there's going to be multiple people.
Especially in the day as well.
Yeah.
At night, it very might bold. Be one at night, maybe, because like, you can blitz attack, but... But then you might notice a gang of people running out of the shop.
It depends whether they went out the back or not.
Oh, yeah, out the back.
But yeah. Other than Edward and Frank, who have obviously already been ruled out, there was, of course, Christina's son, who she'd had out of wedlock, so George.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. If it is to be believed, the son George was fathered by a man named James Holland. James had died in 1862, so we can obviously rule him out of coming back looking for money because he's very much dead.
Dead, yeah.
Okay. Though George himself was obviously classed as a bastard, he was, which is frowned upon for the time, old Mrs. Squires had always had a soft spot for him and had made sure that he was well cared for. She'd managed to get him an apprenticeship at a barber's by the name of Hanley. So she's, at that time, other people have bastard children, I don't know, sort of cast him out, but she was very set on making sure he was taken care of. So obviously at the time of the murders, George was accounted for as he'd actually been painting the residence of the barbershop Hanley. So he was, and it's nowhere near the murder scene, and he was actually seen painting the outside. So couldn't have been George. Okay. We'll call George out. Okay, so that then only left, in terms of relatives, Jemima. Now, Jemima hadn't really kept in touch with her mother and siblings since she'd left with her husband and young children. From accounts, it's noted that Sarah didn't approve of the marriage and that they'd quarrelled around the time of the wedding and that they'd remained estranged ever since.
Okay.
So, take that how you want to take it. Some might say, well, she had beef with her mum, but then at the same time, I think she just, the mum didn't approve of the marriage.
She's Jemima's never moved seen away. Her again. Yeah.
So Jemima's husband had already gone and done a runner to Scotland at this point. So I'm wondering, is that why Sarah didn't really approve of him? Did she maybe think this man is not going to be good enough for you?
Yeah.
Okay. So obviously, sorry, so yeah, so Jemima's husband, he's gone and done a runner to Scotland, and this was 5 years before the murder. So if she was going to come back for money, I'd have thought she'd have done when it before it was, now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When it was like raw.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So she was obviously checked out anyway. So at the time of the murders, Jemima was working as a charwoman at number 64 Hewlett Road in Old Ford. So again, not in the area.
Mm-hmm.
Had a very solid alibi.
Mm-hmm.
So when Jemima was informed of her mother and sister's murder, she apparently lost it altogether and ended up having to be taken into a psychiatric hospital.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
I should probably do a bit of a trigger warning for this next bit.
Okay.
Because it's, some might see it as a sensitive topic, so here's your trigger warning. Though Jemima was obviously watched and attended at the hospital, she managed to cut her own throat with a razor on the 14th of July, so obviously a suicide attempt.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, she was bandaged up and sent to Poplar Infirmary, and she didn't bleed to death. However, so she didn't die from that, she didn't bleed to death. However, she refused to eat or drink and then later died from exhaustion.
Oh.
Yeah, so she was, I suppose, like a hunger strike.
Yeah.
So not very nice.
No.
And for her.
No.
Obviously, an inquest was held and Edwin attended that. He explained that Sarah and Christina had been on good terms with their neighbours, and he said he didn't believe the shop made significant amount of money and that Sarah also had a bank deposit, so could see no reason why she would have left money on the premises. He said he didn't believe Christina had any boyfriends at the time and that knew of no enemies. The boy who had discovered the body was then obviously brought in to the inquest, and he explained how he'd noticed the blood and then had gone across the road to fetch Mrs. Dodd,
mm-hmm.
and that she'd obviously then gave her account, which brought in her husband into the inquest.
Mm.
Now, he mentioned something, I don't know if it's interesting, I just thought it was a little bit odd. I don't know if it's the way it's written, or if I've just, like, misinterpreted it, okay? So, it's kind of his opinion.
Mm-hmm.
But like I said, I don't quite get it, so I thought I'd mention it. So maybe you could either just decipher it and it's nothing, or maybe you also think it's a bit weird. Okay. So Edward Dodd describes how he'd entered the shop after hearing his wife cry out. He said he then saw the body of Sarah behind the counter and had then gone down the passageway to where he then saw Christina's still warm body in a large pool of blood. Dodd speculated that Christina had been dead longer than Sarah, as her blood had been darker and more congealed. He said he'd then sent a boy to fetch the constable, for it was then that he realised this was a case of double murder. I think it's a bit of a strange thing for him to come out, like, she's been dead longer than...
It's also, he's saying that Christina's still warm, but he didn't mention about anything Sarah. About Sarah.
But is that why he's then speculating that that's why one's been dead longer than the other? I just thought it was a bit of an odd thing. Like, he's not a doctor or anything. So for him, you know, if he was a doctor himself, you could know that was something he first noticed.
Unless he's very into true crime and he's just like, yes, I believe that this happened because this, or it's a hallway, it might be darker.
Yeah, that's what I think. I just thought it was a bit of an odd thing to come out with.
I think he might be trying to be helpful, but...
It's obviously like a...
Yeah.
A speculative
comment. Yeah.
But I just thought it was a bit of a... Out of all the things to come out with, it was a bit odd.
It's a bit like, I murdered her first, I got the mum second. A little bit.
So it's like, you know, if he said, like, he'd noticed Sarah's body and then was concerned because he knew Christina worked there, so he decided to go down the passageway and then notice her body, like, that would be a normal statement.
Mm.
Just, I believed her, she was still warm. I believed that this one had been dead longer than the other. Like, I get kind of like... why I get why he might be adding those details. Like, maybe he was just, like, he was adding his own personal thoughts. I don't know.
Possibly.
I feel like, you know, today when they'd be like, that's speculation. Like, they stop you there. Yeah. And they're like, answer the question. Like, do you know what I mean?
Unless he kind of had a little bit of background in that before he had this job.
I don't know. I couldn't.
But then
that
might have been, like, mentioned if he had.
I just thought it was a bit odd.
It's a bit weird.
Okay. Because I don't know if it's significant or not. I just thought it was a bit strange.
It's strange.
Okay. So next to give a statement at the inquest was a man by the name of James Chalkley. He had said that around 10 past one in the afternoon, he'd seen a man wearing a high hat cross Hyde Road just after number 46, and that he was running away from the house. Now, that obviously was minutes apart from when Richard Randall had seen another man, though this man had a white hat, running from the place and had obviously knocked over the boy. So could you throw out there that there was two separate men, or part of a gang?
It's a hat gang. Hat gang. They've all got to wear hats.
Or maybe it's part of the disguise, then they can throw the hat off later. Yeah. Okay. So could you obviously hypothesize that they were part of a gang who had robbed and attacked Mrs. Squires? I don't think that's unreasonable.
No, I think...
Because they were a couple of minutes apart.
Someone seeing you with a hat.
Yeah.
And then you getting rid of that hat. You're only going to remember the hat.
Yeah. So it could either be it's one man and then two men got a bit confused about the types of hat. One's a high hat, one's a wide hat.
Or he has a magic hat that just changes.
Or it's two separate men with two different hats. And like I said, it could be part of a gang. And if one's in the back and one was nearer the front of the shop, one would have run out a few minutes possibly before the other, because the other one's going to get through the shop.
Yeah.
So
possibly.
Take it how you want to take it. Yeah. Something to consider, I think. Okay, so the next witness was the butcher Henry Small, who lived at number 11 in Blanchard Street. He'd lived opposite Sarah for 9 years and knew her well. He had paid her a visit on the day around 11 a.m. Both women were there and had shown Henry where the burglars had tried to break in just a few days before. Sarah had stated how if they had managed to get into the property, they wouldn't have got anything, for I always put my money in the bank. So that also backs up what Edward had said about he got a bank deposit for it to put the money in. So in theory, there shouldn't be any money in the house.
Yeah.
Henry said that she then proceeded to show him how she piled up chairs against the window so that should the gang come back, the chairs would come tumbling, alerting her. So quite good on her part. But she was obviously also very scared, and you can tell she's quite terrified. So Henry said that he left around 8:20 and that he would be the... And obviously... We now know he would be the last person to see them alive. I don't think he's
the
murderer.
I don't think it's him, no.
I don't think you are.
Because, like, why give a little bit of a detail of, like, the chair stacking?
Yeah.
You wouldn't kind of think about, no.
And I think he was, like, he'd been friends with her for a very long time. Like, he obviously now didn't live opposite them anymore, but he had done for a long period of time. So I think he was sort of brought in as a character sort of reference for the deceased.
Yeah.
Okay. So then they heard from Chief Inspector Palmer, and he described the search of the house, how he found a parcel between the mattress and the bed of Sarah's, and that it contained £20 in banknotes and a deposit note for £170. So she had deposited money in the bank, but she'd obviously for some reason had £20 on her. Was that earnings from the day before, or is that just what she'd kept behind to pay for other things?
Yep.
Don't really know.
Don't know.
Okay. So there was no clues as to how the murder or murderers has entered the house, except that it could not have been through the trapdoor in the roof, since it was covered in cobwebs and they weren't disturbed. So with no suspects brought forward to charge, the case remained unsolved. But I do, of course, have a few questions for us. Okay. So obviously, at this point, they've done a lot. But firstly, I wanted to go with the whole 12 o'clock time of death thing. And also the sightings from Richard Randall and James Chalkley. If you wanted to go along with both of those sightings, that would mean that the murderers would have had to have been in the place for at least an hour and 10 minutes, which to me is quite a long time. Like, I know they're ransacking the house, but also if they've been there for an hour and 10 minutes and they're tearing the place apart and murdering people, how did no one hear anything?
Yeah.
And how did no one come into the shop in that time?
Yeah.
And disturb the murder?
It's a bit strange.
So either then you could maybe throw that if they had enough of a gang, could there have been some people in the shop, like, not turning people away, but like, could they have had people on the lookout at the front of the shop?
But then someone would have been like, oh, I tried to go into the shop.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So no. It's a long period of time.
Mm. Maybe from those people have nothing to do with it.
Don't know.
Strange.
So it's just a long time, because if the clock stops at 12, but then that boy doesn't come in till 10 past, and those other, well, the other boy comes in just after 1, and the sightings of the people running away are at 10 past 1 and quarter past 1. I think the boy would have got there for about 1:30.
Mm.
It's a long time to be in there, isn't it? Yeah, I know if you are looking for money and stuff, but an hour and 10 minutes?
Yeah.
It's a hell of a long time. So I'm thinking, does that throw out when they were murdered? Or were they robbed first, maybe tied the women up and then killed the women later?
When did this happen? July.
Yeah.
I was going to say maybe the clock's changed and then maybe they hadn't changed the clock, but no, that wouldn't work.
Yeah. It's just very strange. I feel like it would have been quite busy at that time as well, midday.
Yeah.
In like, London.
You'd assume a murder would have happened in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
Don't know. Maybe it didn't have a working thing.
Yeah, maybe the clock was already broken. Yeah maybe. And it just looked like it stopped there because it'd been knocked over and smashed in the process of ransacking the rest of the place.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Something you want to consider.
Mm.
Okay. So then obviously this throws up motive. Is it a robbery gone wrong? Or did the family have some secret enemies?
Mm.
Now, there's no evidence of that. But the book that I originally found the case up then brings the matter of obviously the two mysterious children who I'd mentioned before,
mm-hmm.
who have been living with the Squires whilst John Squires was still alive. Obviously, those two children, I think, possibly could have been illegitimate children.
Mm-hmm.
But given the fact that Sarah took in George so well, I think it would be unlikely that she would then cast out those two illegitimate children. She strikes me as quite a caring person.
Yeah.
So unless you wanted to throw out there that maybe those two illegitimate children were maybe John's from an affair with another woman, and that when, or they could have been dumped on him, but then she got rid of them after he passed away because she couldn't afford to take them on him. It's a bit of a iffy hypothesis, but could it be those children that have come back?
Mm.
Meh, I don't really know, but that would be like a family secret. But again, I think it's a bit far-fetched, especially if she was so caring towards George.
Yeah.
I find it hard that she would cast out those other two.
Mm, no, I don't think that's... No.
Mm.
Don't like that theory.
Okay. So then I managed to find something else.
Okay.
There's also a rather strange newspaper article from a few days after the murder. And this was in the Times newspaper. And in it, it says this. So I'm going to read the actual bit of the article. It is stated that yesterday morning, the police received intelligence of a person who for a long time has not been heard of, who was supposed to be dead, who knew the habits of the deceased, and for who for a long time has pursued a discreditable course of life. The police attached considerable importance to this communication. That's what was written. It sounds a bit shifty, like someone's come back from the dead, so then I'm thinking, did the husband not die? Or...
Yeah. Or is it... Which one is the... No, because he didn't die.
Or is the husband...
Who's Christina's husband? Did she not have a husband? No,
she's the one that had the illegitimate children.
Okay, so John Squires is supposed to be the one that might have been dead and come back.
Maybe.
But then he's old.
Yeah, that's what I thought. And then... Or then I'm thinking, would it be Jemima's husband that did a runner to Scotland?
Or that kid. The Sarah child.
Oh, the one that I couldn't find records for.
Yeah.
Maybe. But I don't know. Because then...
Okay.
It's never mentioned again anywhere else in any other newspapers, and when the lady who researches this book, she looked in the police file, there was nothing. They hadn't... So in this newspaper article, they reference saying that it's of considerable importance to the police, yet in the official police file there's no nothing. Mention. So where is this mysterious newspaper
it's like the newspaper was like, yeah, we know,
yeah,
please don't know.
So it's like someone sent in a tip off to the newspaper, maybe, like to
because that sounds like people. The killer might have written it themselves and be like, keep printing that. Yeah,
but there was nothing else on it and nothing in the official police file.
I'm going for the other Sarah, the one you don't know about.
Yeah, the one we couldn't find out what had happened.
Yeah, I'm going to that. Yeah,
okay. So next question.
A bit brutal there for a woman.
Yeah, that's what I thought. And also, what would motive be? Because I don't think they had that much money. She could come back for money, but then...
You're looking for your birth certificate?
Yeah, but if she's managed to go all them years, because you think Christina's now, she's obviously would have been born way after Sarah, because Sarah's from the first marriage. Christina's in her late 30s, so Sarah's going to have to be well into her 40s. Mm. If she survived this fucking long without...
But then maybe she needs it to get to America. Because unless that's the one you found in America.
Maybe. They're not just one, not just forged documents, because I'm pretty certain they were easy to get hold of in London.
Probably.
Hmm, interesting.
Okay, what's the next one?
So next question. If it was a robbery, did they get what they want? Because they've left money behind in Sarah's bed, so maybe it wasn't money that they were after.
That's difficult, told you.
Well, don't know. Possibly.
That's because the annoying thing, because you don't know.
It's print sellers, obviously. They print stuff for papers and other leaflets and bills and things.
Yeah.
But they do sell some stationery. But I can't imagine anyone wants stationery that bloody desperately.
No, it'd have to be something personal in the back, then, in the house.
So...
I don't know.
I don't get it. So did they get what they came for?
I don't know. Seeing as there's no, like, records of what they had before and after.
Yeah. So I don't know. Yeah, I don't know what was taken.
I don't know.
So did they even get what they came for?
I don't know.
Was it even a robbery? I don't know. Okay. So also, this is more an observation I've had for myself, but do you not think that Christina's injuries seem 10 times worse than Sarah's? Now, Christina was obviously battered 15 times in the head, whereas Sarah, I'll say only 5 times, but it's 5 times. Now, was that because Sarah was older and easier to kill?
Or was it more personal?
Was it a more personal attack on Christina? So was she the intended target? So it wasn't a robbery. It
could be.
And then obviously they had to kill Sarah because she saw the perpetrator.
Yeah.
So, or is it just going back to that Christina put up more of a fight, so it took more blows to kill her? I don't know. There's all those questions. It seems a very personal attack, doesn't it?
Yeah. Bludgeoning someone on the head. Yeah.
15 times so much that you've disfigured them.
Yeah.
It's not nice. It seems very personal, doesn't it? Yeah. So, I'm a little bit confused, to be honest, by this whole case. And if the gang theory kind of makes sense, but then if they ransacked the place looking for money, like they literally turned the place upside down, why didn't they think to look under the bed, which is where the money was found, which is what makes me think it wasn't a robbery and it was a personal attack? Because if you'd gone for the money, surely under the bed is one of the first places you'd fucking look. Because they'd literally, from the accounts of the things and like the depictions that they've done in, obviously it's the drawing in the Illustrated News of the crime scene, like the whole house was tipped upside down, like there was drawers upside down, obviously the clock's been knocked over, every room had been like turned upside down.
But is that staged to make it look like it was a robbery?
Maybe. But again, like I said, if it was money they were looking for, you would have expected that they would have lifted up the mattress and gone, like, why leave that behind?
I think it might have, like, been staged to look like a robbery.
So, it wasn't a robbery after all, it was something else. So, and also, then my next biggest thing, which I've kind of mentioned, is, like, how did no one hear anything? Either the banging about and the smashing about, but also, didn't Sarah or Christina scream? So, did no one hear that? And surely, like, there's just going to be a lot of banging and crashing. For the time of day as well.
Yeah. Unless it's just very noisy outside on the streets and stuff. But then, yeah, like, you might hear it from the inside of, like, you being next door, you'd be like, what's that?
Because if it wasn't for the fact that they'd had Henry's account of him going in the morning, I would have said, was there a possibility, could they have been killed in the early hours of the morning? And those people thinking they've seen the ladies in the window, could they just be confused with another day? And, like, was the day before.
Or is that, did you say it was a printing thing? Maybe they're loud?
Maybe
like that, whatever they heard, they just assumed it was the machines printing.
I don't know, but to ransack a whole house is a bit more than like a printer going off, isn't it?
I know, but there were the printers like, well, whoever's done it
like full on stealth mode.
Yeah,
I think the gang theory is quite likely, but maybe it's a personal thing, because there was also the thing of, obviously, Sarah, I'd read a newspaper article, but I don't want to say it was a reliable source because it was another woman and she strikes me a bit of like, oh, I heard this. So, you know, like when you have now people like jump on the news like, oh, I heard this rumour. So it was quite rumour based, but some had said that Sarah said she knew who some of the people were that had tried to break in before. So if you want to believe it is a gang, did they come back to kill them? There was this woman came back and said they did it as a warning to everyone else, like not to dob us in, because you dob us in and you'll be dead like them.
Yeah.
It's a possibility, but again, I would have expected them to take something away, like money and stuff. Why leave that behind?
Yeah. So strange. I can see why it's unsolved. Don't know.
It's a bit tricky. There's a lot of questions surrounding it. But the attack does seem very personal.
Yeah, I think it's more personal, and I think they staged the robbery.
But yeah. So, but as to who it could be, no idea.
No one knows.
And I would have liked to have known who those mystery men were that were seen
with the hat.
In Mr. High Hat and Mr. Wide Hat.
Maybe, like, he looked and it was, like, that way, so it looked really tall.
Yeah.
And then he was like, okay.
It looks wide. Yeah. That's the thing, is it could have been, because it was only 5 minutes apart, their account. It could have technically been the same person, and they've just got the descriptions a little bit.
Maybe one just, like, up. Saw a glimpse, whereas yeah. one, like, looked at him properly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it was in the same road coming out from the same part.
Yeah.
So it could have just been, they've slightly, because it literally was, like, minutes apart. So it could be two separate men, one's left after the other,
mm.
or it could be the same man, and they've just not quite got, they've not remembered the hat right, maybe.
No. Just they knew that he had a hat on.
Mm.
Maybe they saw him like running out of the corner of their eye.
Because, well, you know yourself, like, obviously eyewitnesses are important, but it's easy to get bits of information wrong. Because you think how many people you see in a day. Like, if you think if you went into town, you might remember someone like, oh, they had a yellow coat, but then you might think there was something else on mm-hmm. it and it wasn't. You've just seen that thing on someone else and you've muddled the two together.
Yeah, eyewitnesses aren't that reliable as we think they are.
No, there's holes in it. They're good.
Mm.
To a certain extent, but you need more than just an eyewitness.
Mm.
They're good at backing things up,
mm.
but yeah, you can't solely rely on them, I don't think. No,
it's not a good conviction thing.
No, it's more, and you lose over time, you lose things or muddle things, or because you go back and you think about it, don't you? So you might end up inadvertently adding details that didn't actually happen.
Exactly. Because
you're trying so hard to remember something.
Exactly.
But yeah, so I don't know if the listeners have any theories as to what's gone on here, but I just thought it was quite an interesting one. Obviously a very brutal thing, and then obviously it's sad about the other daughter. She ends up dying because she effectively kills herself.
Mm.
I think she's just so distraught over her mum dying, and then obviously Frank's already a bit of a stray.
Mm.
And then there's just Edward. He seems to be the only one that's sort of done all right for himself.
That's because he was the killer the entire time.
Even then, like, he could have been a struggling musician. Yeah. So I should imagine that's not particularly well paid at those times.
No.
So, yeah, I don't know.
Not a very happy outcome for...
No, it's not.
No.
And I understand why it's gone unsolved. It's just tricky, isn't it? Mm. But I thought it was interesting and a bit different that it was a double murder.
It's good that she got some evidence of, like, her pulling out the hair. Just a shame it didn't come to anything.
Because for the times, they're so shit at collecting evidence. That she, like, had a wealth of evidence, like, and there was the whole button in the blood thing. Mm. Yeah, they couldn't find anyone.
Yep.
And you think, fuck's sake, the one time they actually did the job properly...
And they didn't.
So, yeah. Who was so, yeah, an old man. So, again, maybe it was John that came back, old man with grey hair.
Mm-hmm.
Or was the illegitimate son, George, was his dad not really dead, James, if he was the father?
Maybe. Could be, but...
Because he would be also be in his 40s, so he might have just gone grey a little bit earlier.
Yeah, men do. Yeah.
So maybe it could have been him.
Could have been.
But then is that mysterious newspaper just to throw people off?
Mm. It's just weird that it was printed.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Strange.
But yeah, in the police files, there was no records. Because it was like this, it's like the police were so concerned, like they were waiting for communication, yet in the police file, there was nothing on it.
It's a head scratcher.
It's very strange. Interesting. But yeah, maybe the listeners could let us know.
Yeah.
On their theories. Maybe they have thought about someone that we've not even thought about.
It's weird that it's kind of just like they based it solely on the family and then no one else.
Yeah. I think, again, is it so difficult to find...
It's a needle in a haystack.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because there was obviously those other robberies.
Mm.
I don't know. It's one thing to...
I think they were probably just like, oh, it's another murder. We can't really...
There's that, but I also think it's quite difficult to go from trying to rob people for a bit of money to then...
Mm.
Bludgeoning them, you know, like you could kill them. Mm. Like, it's not unheard of robbery.
It's just
gone
a bit
wrong,
extreme for
but it, yeah, it seems overkill, especially with Christina.
Yeah, it's more personal. So yeah, don't know who it is.
Hmm.
Strange.
Yeah, I think that's it for today.
Yeah.
In the meantime,
keep creeping,
and we'll keep digging.